kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. As you could tell, Cole's here. Cole, how are you doing?
I got no pants on anymore. I'm fine.
Nice. I'm in shorts as well. Awesome Prime dropping 10 biddies in chat. That is right. We are live on Twitch. Drop it. There we go. Thank you, George. It wasn't coming up in time, but it's another party cast. We have a bunch of reviews to take care of. And we're celebrating with Chris and Purnell once again. How are you two doing?
I don't know. I'm doing all right, though. I got to say, you know, my first bathtub mint and julep concoction, I mean, I was happy with it. But for us to all get together to celebrate it as a group, that's, I can't complain. I appreciate the camaraderie. It's nice.
Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Just enjoying a good old-fashioned can of Coke over here.
That sounds decidedly like it was not brewed in your bathtub, which means it had to come from the toilet.
Yes, that's the only place it can get.
And if you want to understand what the hell we're talking about, go to patreon.com/the SML podcast.
Yes, finally an ad on the SML podcast. I can't believe it.
Spoiler, you'll still have no idea what the hell we're talking about.
So no. I've been here the whole time, and I have no clue what's going on.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that'll be the second clip. We actually have a third clip that is waiting in the wings that is going to be pretty special for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Cole, you got to hear it already. What were your thoughts?
I need to do my version of it, and then we can have a battle as to which one was better. But you have to give us a dollar to give us your opinion.
It'll be a head-to-head face-off. Oh, my God, yeah. I am so fucking hot tonight. Holy shit.
Well, damn, I mean, I know you've been hitting at the clubs lately, but don't go bragging about it. Jeez, I'm
self-conscious. I'm serious. I'm sweating my ass off. I don't know why I'm so hot tonight. It's not even that crazy hot up here. It's only in the 70s. It's just the house, for some reason, is just hot as hell.
Well, do you have any windows open? Any airflow going? Because if not
in my room, no. There ain't shit for airflow in my room.
There's your answer. There you go.
Joe's collection of gaming stuff all covers all the windows. He can't open a window.
You gotta de-game that room.
Technically, there is one window I could open over there.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't show up on stream.
It's also covered game shit.
Statues, no, I can actually open it. I can actually access it. And I do not have steel books lining my windows.
We'll have to be careful. You end up opening the window, all of a sudden, like one of those Pennsylvania jackals comes leaping into the window. Oh, shit!
I do not use steel books as window insulation.
But now someone's listening to this
because I got so tickled at the idea.
Now someone's listening to the episode going, that's a good idea. Winter is on the way.
Steel books. Yeah, they'll keep the heat. They'll attract the heat. They'll bring it inside. Yeah, that's a good idea. I could do that.
Yeah, but then come spring, your collector's value is going to drop by like 30%.
Why?
Because, you know, the weather, it's going to warp the freaking steel book. It's not going to be pretty, man. It's just bad. It's bad.
They have a new purpose in life now. They're not about collectibles anymore.
They're window insulation. Window blinds.
They're about saving everybody in the heat.
I love that Purnell had the 30% stat ready to go.
That's right.
That was in the barrel. He knew exactly the percentage of value that you would lose by keeping your window insulated with steelbook video games until spring.
Yeah, no particular reason, though. I mean, no specific reason as to why. Just, you know, things. Stuff.
Think of how popular you could be on Pinterest, though, if you created a how-to on how to make blinds out of steelbooks.
Oh, jeez.
Like, that shit, Pinterest would, like, lose its shit. Because, you know, there's a whole horde of women who are looking for a way to get back at their husbands who bought too much gaming shit.
Yeah. Well, I'm not married to any of them, so spill the beans.
Here's my free template for how to cut the steelbooks.
You're going to be the Martha Stewart.
Secret number one, when your husband goes out for work, before you leave, make sure to turn the thermostat up about 10 degrees. Set the house to about, I don't know, 90 or so in the winter. It might not seem like much, but over time, those games and those discs will quickly come to regret ever being pressed. And so will your husband. He too will regret being pressed.
That's how he becomes depressed.
Damn, I'm impressed.
Hi-oh! Oh my God, that just sounds like hell though. Like, just imagine that one like really angry woman was like, I've been tired of it. I've been setting this shit up. I've been raising the thermostat in the house for the last 4 months. Go check your PlayStation games, Jimmy. Go check them. You might be surprised. This is poor man. What did I ever do to you? You bought Sonic Forces.
You're like calling upon the spirit of Brian Johnson over there. AC/DC singer.
I'm so tired of having to get you.
God. Do you imagine that guy yelling at you because he's your dad?
Oh, jeez.
Set the recorder on. You got an album coming up.
You gotta clean your room!
Got a whole album produced. Like, what happened here? How'd you get so rich? Well, here is get your ass off the toilet. You're running late for school. Why'd you walking on your mom and me?
Wow.
All the greatest hits. Just ready to go.
Oh, gosh.
Go beat that ass!
The show has gotten so good since we started the money train.
With all these lucrative ones coming, and we can do such fantastic things like, you know, wash one of our t-shirts and then share the books to group.
That $3 coming in is going to get us really far. That's 75 cents a per. Oh, wait, no, we still have to factor in taxes and then Patreon's cut. I'm sure they take a nice percentage. So we're looking at about a quarter a piece.
Man, I'm going to be chewing some bubble gum on the next episode. Just saying, it might be double mint if you get a drift.
I'm going to save up for a candy bracelet. I'm gonna wait 2 months and do the 50 cents and get the candy bracelet.
Oh, he's blamed out.
Come next financial quarter, that bit o' honey is mine.
Hey, Santa just dropped 10 biddies.
For the laundry fund. Hey,
drop it!
He bought us a Tide Pod. But don't eat it, guys. We have to use it for the laundry.
I'm gonna quit my job. You know why? Because it's all about them candy bracelets and bit o' honey bucks now. I'm living a grand life.
You want a Charleston chew while we're at it?
Oh, it's gonna be a while before I can afford a Charleston chew.
I mean, that's premium candy though.
Exactly. We gotta start small.
Yeah. Start with the bit o' honey.
Name brand shit.
Start with the bit o' honey. Maybe work your way up to, like, I don't know, a peanut patty.
Then, with a lot of hard work, in 2 years' time, we could all be chewing a portion of a Snickers.
I believe in that future.
Real stuff.
And we'll get there on the backs of our quality game reviews.
Forbidden laundry
right now.
Oh my God!
Forbidden laundry candy. Oh Jesus. The root beer candy shaped like a keg. Hell yes, I love root beer barrels.
Bottle caps.
Just came out of the washing machine.
Root beer bottle caps are the best.
Yeah, good call.
You could throw away the whole rest of the thing of the bottle caps as long as.
Let's not get wasteful here. We're not making that much on the show. All right, how about you give me the leftover caps and I'll consume them.
Okay.
There we go. Yeah,
don't be wasteful. There's starving podcasters out there in rural Kentucky.
They would kill for those bottle caps. They probably have. Alert the authorities.
There are no authorities out here in Redneck Land.
All the more reason to kill for bottle caps. This lawless shit. You want some sugar? Take it.
Oh, there was a lot wrong with us.
He just said, take some sugar, and like I'm having nightmares because my flashbacks. Because my sister makes these great big Halloween candy buckets for the kids every year. And I mean like a bucket full of candy for each kid that weighs at least 5 pounds. She weighs them to make sure they are the same for every kid. And this year she was like, oh, I ordered 90 pixie sticks.
Jesus.
And not the little ones, the big giant ones.
Whoa. Oh, she's going to juice those kids up.
Why the fuck do you hate me? And she goes, don't look at this. The box was destroyed when it got here. So I complained about it and they sent me another box.
Those kids are going to be juiced up.
By the time she was done, I was just sitting in my chair, rocking back and forth, all curled up on myself. Like, why does she hate me?
And for the record, two things about that. When it comes to Halloween candy selection, oh my God, we'll never review, but it doesn't matter. We're having fun. So two things about candy selection are, one, just having the sheer best candy on the block. You want to be the parent, the person that all the kids are bragging about. This guy brought out the real guns. Full candy bars wrapped in $2 bills. This dude's bringing it. And then the other element, of course, is the most hyperactivity inducing candy. So like you said, the pixie sticks, just take that Snickers bar and coat it in pixie and down that shit. Kids are going to be cranked out, going to be all over the news, talking about the new thing the kids are popped up on. They don't know where it stemmed from. It stemmed from my house. I left directions on the stoop. This is how you really get high off your candy. Just take that pixie stick, you dip a Snickers bar into it, and then roll it around in crushed Butterfinger. And it's just...
Ow, my pancreas.
It's phenomenal.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God, I do have a... Okay. Here,
what, you do have a pixie stick?
Are you trying it right now?
I have a picture of the current buckets that she's working on, but she's not... She says she's not done with them. There's still more candy to put in them.
All right. In the meantime, when you find that Snicker and the Butterfinger, you gotta try the recipe. You know, just that'll really get your husband whacked. They're like, oh my God, now you're going to bed late, but you're jacked up on sugar and you're still rambling. What the hell's going on? They're like, just like randomly thumbs up out of nowhere. Thanks, Purnell. Boom. It's like, who is Purnell? And who are you raising your thumb to? That's so camp right here.
Oh, man. We got to give a quick shout out to Root Beer Is My Jam, who converted a Twitch Prime sub to a Tier 1 sub.
I don't know what that is, indeed. But it sounds delicious.
Take your money. Tier 1 candy.
You are making me so hungry for Halloween. Last year, we were the cool house, though. We have like a liquidator outlet nearby, and... They sell just like bulk stuff that's been damaged. And every now and then they'll have like candy there. So we bought, like, we had packets of full size packets of Starburst and Snickers and Skittles. We were like the party house for an hour or two until we ran out.
Gotta get the strobe lights out. So I was like, stop on over and get some treats. Get you hyped up. Don't pee in near my house or I'll cut you.
Oh my gosh.
Don't pee near the house, you'll kill all the flowers.
Oh, Jesus.
All that toxic stuff being filtered out.
The funny part is, we'll probably have like a similar conversation like this like 3 weeks from now when Halloween's coming up, and it's going to be a completely different dialogue. Cool, us, you know what we have for all the kids and all that jazz. It's going to be amazing. Oh, Halloween.
Oh, Halloween, indeed.
Oh, yeah, it's still 30 days away, though.
Yeah, we still got plenty of time, so...
Fuck that. We've had our costumes picked out for, like, 4 months now.
Wow. So did I. It's called Pants and a Shirt. Who are you this year? employed and thankful for it.
I got my Skyrim hat that Joe sent me in the mail, so that's what I'm doing.
Nice.
Just gonna be a chubby dragonborn.
Nice. Are you gonna have an arrow in your knee?
UPS package?
You what?
Are you going as a UPS package?
Might as well.
Oh man. Well, should we get to the reviews? We have a lot to talk about tonight. Should we dive into these?
Yeah, let's do it.
As fun as this is, I want to sleep tonight. So.
Yes, we all need to sleep eventually, but we got six games to talk about. The first game to talk about is called The Surge 2, developed by Deck 13, published by Focus Home Interactive, released September 24th on Xbox One and PS4 for $59.99, on Steam for $49.99. In a bid to survive, explore the sprawling, devastated Jericho City. Fight ferocious threats in brutal, unforgiving combat, slashing and tearing the limbs off your opponents to steal their equipment. Purnell, tell us about The Surge 2.
Well, The Surge 2 is Focus Home Interactive's, you know, apology to me for not so much apology, but just like the fact that I bought Surge 1 and then never utilized it. But this time is different because I'm playing the sequel. And from what I read about the Surge 1, this sounds like, or rather plays like, the better game. And I am thankful for that. So Surge 2 it plays very similarly to what people would consider to be a Dark Souls type of game. And not so much just in the it's really hard camp, but also in the whole idea of like nodes you can warp between and how the nodes are where you spawn at when you die. And that's also where you upgrade and da da da. But, and also the difficulty. Oh, the difficulty is totally there. But where I think it makes a number of honestly pretty cool improvements in that style of play, or not so much improved, but at least just things that make it different or play differently, or most specifically these elements. So combat involves you equipping a soldier, a character that you create yourself at the beginning of the game, with a variety of different items. You can have a melee weapon. You can have a drone, which can do anything from like drop banners, which can be utilized by playing sort of hide and seek with other players in the game universe. And if they can't find your banner long enough, you get money for that. You can get a gun that basically fires bullets, like different types of guns, like basically any gun type item is going to be based on that drone. So different types of guns, that drone thing, you can take a thing that lets you warp right back to the last med station, which is where you go to upgrade stuff in this game, though it will cost you with a penalty of all your scrap, but whatever. But you have those, you have helmets, armor, helmets, a chest plate, one arm armament for each half of your body, and then leg armaments for each leg. And whereas in most games, including like Dark Souls, you typically find it in treasure chests or purchase at shops, in this game, the primary way to get armor is by taking it off of other people, off of other enemies. So if you see a guy out wandering around and you target him like you would in a normal attack, action RPG style game, you can then target specific limbs on their body. You have your normal attack, which goes horizontal, and you have another attack, but once you do like a vertical attack, so it's like, you know, horizontal vertical strike. And once you've targeted the body part, you can pretty much swing on them, go cuckoo bananas. And once you get, you start attacking them. And as you would do the attack damage, you'll also boost something called a battery meter. And this is just something that goes at the beneath your health bar and your stamina gauge. And once you've charged your battery up to certain levels, you can do two things with it related to combat. One, you can use a charge of the battery pack to get some of your health back. And the other thing you can do when the enemy's health is low enough on a certain limb is you can hold down the X button and then unleash a sort of decapitation move and remove that limb from the person's body. And if you remove one of their arms and that arm happens to be holding a weapon, that weapon is yours now. If they're holding a helmet, that schematic to build that helmet is yours now. Same for chest plate, armaments, and leg armaments. I love to call this game the mugging. It feels fantastic for that exact reason. Because in a lot of games, you know, you'll be playing them and, you know, you might know from a wiki or something that this enemy might drop X item if you beat him enough and get lucky. Whereas in this game, you flat out see that he's holding a cool sword. You're like, I want that shit. I'm going to take it. And you can do it. You go right after him, you beat the tar out of him, you knock all this gear off of him. And it also incentivizes you to go seek out enemies that you'd otherwise consider avoiding, because quite frankly, you want to mug them to death. So I found that element to be extremely enjoyable. And another thing that makes this fairly different from like typical Soulsy type games is the fact that when you kill enemies, you get scrap, which is this game's version of soul. You also get scrap from various treasure chests sometimes, or like various like items you might just see on the ground. Might be like scrap that can be transferred into like, you know, item versions of scrap that you can transfer into like physical scrap that you can spend. Now, in Souls games, typically when you have your currency, you have to spend it on experience. You have to spend it to level up your character at bonfires. And if you don't, you're walking around with it until you do, unless something kills you, resulting in you dropping everything you've got. But in this game, you can, if you don't want to spend it yet, you can just bank it at the med bay stations. Again, just to reiterate, that's like pretty much the bonfires in this game, the checkpoints in the game. You can bank your actual scrap, and so that when you die, you don't have to worry about losing it if you haven't been able to decide what you want to do with it yet. I honestly make it's really good, because I'm a hoarder in these games, so to be able to be told you don't need to spend your points if you don't want to is a glorious thing for me. I love it to death. Though, it's funny because they did add one other little interesting quirk in regards to like how this whole, you know, scrap, death, and loss cycle happens. So typically, Souls games, you drop your stuff, it's on the ground, you get to it, if you pick it up, it's yours again. But if you die on the way there, it's gone for good. That exists in the Surge 2 also, but something I think is kind of cool, yet also a bit stressful, is the fact that in this game, when your tech scrap is left on the ground after you die and you respawn, a counter, or rather a timer, appears in the upper left corner of the screen, usually about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. You have that much time to get from where you respawn back to where you dropped your stuff. Otherwise, it just disappears. It's gone.
Oh, man.
It's pretty brutal. Admittedly, the game does offer a number of different shortcuts you can unlock throughout the map. So you'll be unlocking all kinds of alternate routes to get places. But nonetheless, you got to move those feet. Now, there are ways to get a bit of time back as you progress, which is by killing dudes. So you'll see an enemy on the map on the way to get your stuff back, and you might need 10 seconds. Can you kill that guy in 5? Because if you do, you'll get 10 seconds, which gives you a little bit more time to make that sprint. So it adds the tension, because in Dark Souls, you can half the time just skip, sneak past dudes. In this game, you might have to run the risk of killing a guy that you shouldn't be fighting because you need the extra time to go get the stuff you dropped. Honestly, it's stressful, and I love it. I love it for that. It's something enticing about having to make that rush. Combat in this game, like I said, is very fun. Exploring the environments is a joy for me as well. Admittedly, the game, it's, again, I guess it goes without saying, but this game is not easy. If you're the type of person who wants to play a game and not be challenged, this is probably not the game for you. But if you do want to be challenged, this is definitely the place to be, because I feel like this game is a decent change in pace from what you get out of a traditional Dark Souls game. I even forgot to mention the implant system, so I should talk about that real quick too.
Go for it.
In addition to normal equipment that you can equip, like I mentioned earlier, there's also an implant system. Now, implants are sort of like equipable buffs that you can apply to your character. Now, at the start of the game, you have, I think it was like 3 slots that you get, and each slot can be equipped with 1 buff or 1 implant. So long as you have the core points available to do so. Core is, think of it as like an equipment load value. Once you exceed the core load, you can't equip more junk. That goes for your equipment and your implants. And of course, leveling up increases that core load so you can equip more stuff. And every 10 levels or so, you'll unlock a brand new slot which will allow you to equip 1 more implant. And these things go all over the map. You get some implants that will convert, you know, like damage to hit points. You'll get some implants that will give you bonus like health charges at the beginning of a run. Health charges being like, think of them like Estus Blast or Stim Pack, so you can like heal yourself on the go. There's just a variety of them, and they ultimately change the way you'll want to play the game or how you want to approach the game. You might have a build that makes it so that you want to be stealthy and just sprint past dudes, whereas some might make you go, hey, I need to kill dudes constantly because this is giving me a passive buff that allows me to maintain this boost as long as I keep bills, I keep being aggressive and not evading everybody. So it's just, I like the implant system a lot. And again, to going back to the comparison to Dark Souls, because I kind of feel like I have to do that, I feel like this is another level of customization that makes you feel more invested in what your character is capable of doing. In addition to that, armor also allows you to get armor set bonuses too. So, and it's very well spelled out, whereas in some games it's kind of cryptic and you just kind of have to know you're getting a boost or whatever. In this game, they probably tell you if you have three pieces of an armor set equipped, you'll get one bonus. And if you have all the pieces of an armor set equipped, you'll get another better bonus. So you'll be doing that kind of thing too, whereas you could just kind of mix and match pieces of armor. You'll also want to build full sets to get the cool bonuses from it. Oh my God, I'm rambling about this game. But in the end, I got to say, I honestly really enjoyed The Surge 2. Something I did not expect to be able to say about it, honestly, because, again, as far as what I can recall, unless anybody here noticed differently, the game just kind of fell out of nowhere for me. Like, I didn't even know The Surge 2 was on the way. And then
it didn't seem like there was a lot of marketing behind this one, but it sounds like the game is worth it in the end. So for $60 on console, $50 on Steam, what do you think of it?
I think it's worth purchasing, man. This game is a lot of fun, and I think you will get your fair share of play out of it. And since it inspires or encourages new game plusing, all the better.
Nice.
Rice.
All right. Next game to talk about is Sniper Elite 3 Ultimate Edition, developed and published by Rebellion, released October 1st on the Switch for $34.99. Face the infamous Africa Corps of World War II in this award-winning third-person shooter. You are the turning point because one bullet can change history. Chris, tell us about Sniper Elite 3.
It takes more than one bullet, I think.
But one bullet can.
Yeah, I suppose. Dang it. I was trying to look at a thing. Sorry.
You are prepared.
Yes, very prepared. No, I was just looking for, the historical touchstone that this game draws upon. And yeah, I had to look it up. And like, the internet's being bad. Okay, anyway, so yes, Sniper Elite 3 Championship Edition HD.
Hyper Remix,
and Knuckles.
my God.
Okay, so this game is one of those games that, like, you always see, like, you know, in game stores or whatever, like GameStop or whatnot, like on the shelf, and you know, somebody like me, I just kind of glance over it, because it's like, oh, it's a game where you're a guy with a gun, and you gotta shoot the other guys. That's limited interest to me usually, but I picked this one up anyway because I was like, let's broaden the old horizons here. And yeah, actually this game is a little bit different, and so I, you know, did quite like it. I think the game is kind of it was kind of saved in my eyes by not being too serious, even though, yeah, it's a thing that's based on the Battle of Gazala. That's what I was looking for, which is which is funny because it's a battle that was fought during World War II, of course, in Libya, and it involved, like, pretty much, you know, the Allied forces of the United Kingdom and India, South Africa, the Free French, and you know, against Italy and Germany, of course, but. Yet you are a gruff American from, like, the 90s, who looks very much like you're from the 90s, kind of dropped into the middle of it. I'm not sure. I don't think the U.S. was actually heavily involved in that historically. But anyways, that's just me being a history guy. Not that I knew that. I researched it. I was like, well, let's see how historically accurate this is.
Awesome Prime says it's a time traveler.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, time traveler. Yeah, so you're a time traveling dude dropped from a band of brothers or whatever into actual World War II in North Africa. And yeah, it's basically a fight, you know, against the Nazis by the white saviors. Literally everybody in this game is white, which I found convenient. It's like, okay. I guess you know, best way to avoid getting into trouble is just avoid it altogether.
I guess so.
It works.
Yeah, right. Somebody said that there's like a whole ton of like characters that you can pick from in the multiplayer, which I didn't get into because I didn't want to play multiplayer online on a Switch game that only came out today. But makes apparently sense. Like apparently everybody in the multiplayer roster is a white dude. And I'm like, okay. Whatever. Nice to finally see my people represented in a video game. Anyway. Oh my God. Okay. I had to get that out of the way because everything else is fun. You get dropped into this battle and like basically you're given your like sidearm pistol and your machine gun and your sniper rifle. And most of the game takes place behind various like things that you hide behind.
Cover.
Yes. I was going to say sandbags, but cover is a better vague expression. Where you hide behind them and basically pull out the scope and, you know, zoom in and shoot enemies through the head. And I liked it because it reminded me a lot of what I do most of the time in Skyrim. So, but this time is actually like with guns and, you know, things like that. So the thing that most stands out, of course, in the Sniper series, because this is actually in at least I know as of the second game and on through, what it has is that when you actually aim for an enemy and then snipe them, you then go into kill cam mode, which I think this game has one of the more infamous kill cams, because what it does,
hey,
is
I like it, cam, don't you dare.
No, I like kill cam. I love it. If you've ever watched my Skyrim stream, I always cackle like a madman every time I get kill cam.
I was like, like cam, like our cam. Like,
oh, hey. No. No, I mean
I'm innocent.
Cam, like, no, I mean cam like camouflage. Kill camouflage. No, but no, like it slows down into like this extreme bullet time, and you see the bullet leave the gun in slow motion, and then you know, get all blurry and twitchy, and like then you see the enemy, and what it does is it does this cutaway where you see the X-ray version of the person. And you see the bullet, like, enter in their skull and, like, you know, break apart all the bones and, like, you know, explode eyeballs and then, you know, create this giant exit wound or, you know, break a bone as it passes through, you know, all in, like, super slow-mo. And then it, like, cuts out quickly before you see, like, the external damage and then, you know, you move on.
Of course.
Yes, exactly. The type of X-ray, you know, deaths that were made popular in Mortal Kombat. I don't know who did it first, honestly. Both of those series elude me at the moment. in that I haven't played them since a long time ago. But so it basically does that. So it's all about like sneaking around and sniping people, but they really set up these stages to be really multi-platform. They give you lots and lots of options. Everything from like an actual official sniper's nest or roost or whatever they call it. You know, those little water towers like that you climb up to shoot deer or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they give you those things. They give you, you know, like I said, the sandbags all over the place. You can get on top of a mountain. You can go inside a cave. You can basically set up just about anywhere. But the game has a very handy guide for noobs, total noobs like me, where they basically kind of tell you where to go and like what to do for the most part. And it's a good thing, too, because each mission, like there's not a whole lot of missions in this game. I looked it up and apparently there's only like 8 missions, but each one takes place in a stage that is so large that it really does feel like, you know, 3 or 4 levels put together. So it's like once you're done killing all these Nazis, then you go over there and kill those Nazis, and these Nazis will wait for you kindly while you, you know, take care of business over here. And, yeah, you know, once you kill all the Nazis, it plays like a cutscene, and you get to find out what happens next to our soldier. The gist of the story is he gets sent on more missions.
No,
I know I guess it's not a Call of Duty type thing where it's like, you know, building up some epic like opera out of, you know, American imperialism. But anyways, either way. yeah, like, and, you know, I hear that there's other missions and stuff, but, like, the first three missions are largely like that, like, exactly the same kind of idea, but in different settings. And, you know, I never quite got to the ones where I hear that stuff starts actually getting really different. But I had a lot of fun with the stages that I did play. And again, these levels are extremely meaty. So, yeah, you end up chewing on one for like an hour or 2 hours. Like, and wow. that's without doing all of the side quests and like finding all of the collectibles and things like that, all of which give you experience points that are added to your total sort of, I guess, experience level, which I don't know. They didn't quite explain what the benefit is of leveling up, but I do know it actually contributes to your online ranking. And this does contain an online leaderboard. And yeah, at the end of my first day, I had like 745 experience points or something like that, because I just kind of breezed through. I didn't do any side missions whatsoever. And I was like, okay, well, let's see how I stack up against everybody else who's playing this game starting today. Oh, wow, the leader has 29,000 points already, which is why I don't do online leaderboards. But this game has it, so that's nice. So some other things that I really like about this game is that you can actually do local or multiplayer. Local and or online multiplayer, not only to do like a battle royale or a capture the flag or, you know, the usual type of games that you'd see in a first person shooter, but you can do an entire cooperative campaign through the entire game with a second person that has a second Switch. Sweet. Like right there in your living room. Yeah. And, or however many people, I don't know. It didn't actually mention a limit, and I didn't have a second person with a Switch and a copy of this game, so I couldn't test it out. However, I love that as an inclusion. I would absolutely love to play this game with a second person, both of us being like badass snipers who are, you know, just sitting there in the living room drinking Coke and eating candy. And, eating a giant stack of Bit of Honeys and Purnell's special
shoes and
Purnell's special Snickers pixie dust. Or not pixie dust. But,
yeah,
you
know. Buddy.
Mm-hmm. What is the stuff called? Pixie sticks. Pixie dust is an illicit drug.
Close
anyway,
enough.
You know.
Close enough. Anywho's. So I also had to go in and confirm, because I was like, okay, so they got headshots here. Oh, I got even more experience points for a heart shot. All right, I'm going for it. I went for a ball shot. It's yes. There.
Yes, it yeah. Is.
You get testicle shots. It's the first time I've seen a testicle explode on my Switch, and I couldn't be happier about that.
Right in the Mean Bean Machine.
Yeah, right in Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine. And funny enough, the first time I actually successfully executed it, it didn't kill the guy. He was still looking around with his gun.
Oh, man.
And I'm like,
gotta hurt.
Are you kidding me? You're taking a high-powered rifle shot through the Benghazis, and you're still, like, looking around for somebody to shoot? The war's over at that point. You're done. But, like,
over.
It's exactly that kind of stupid fun that I really enjoyed about Sniper Elite. I was afraid it was going to be too serious, especially once my, you know, dude with his Duke Nukem boy showed up and was like, oh, the war and all that stuff, I gotta go shoot people. And I was like, oh, God, come on. And then, yeah, suddenly I'm, like, sniping people in the nuts and, like, you know, exploding eyeballs and stuff. And I'm like, and, you know, everybody else, like, around the person whose eyeball just exploded, they're like, hey, what's going on here? And, like, it's realistic in to a point. It's realistic where you want it to be and absolutely goofballs where you want it to be there. So all around it ended up being like a really enriching experience, and I shall definitely be playing this again, and I may even give like another sniper game a shot, as it were, nice. You know, when it comes up.
Well,
yeah.
$35 on this one. What do you think?
$35. I think that's good. Because obviously this game is a little old now. I think it's what, 4 years old
from like its original.
Release. Yeah, and of course with the Switch you got some mechanical compromises. So yeah, if you're wanting to take this sniper experience on the go, $35 is a great price for that. I mean, that's basically, you know, that's as low as a AAA game goes, and I'm sure that this will end up having like some kind of physical release too. So which you might want because the game is a pretty hefty download. So
how big?
I have to look. I remember it. I had to delete some stuff to get it on there, but hang on here. Software information. Manage software. No, wait. I don't know how to tell.
This is riveting.
Yeah, I know. You might move on to Pernell, and I'll have my answer at by the time I do my next review.
And 42. I believe there is a physical version as well. It looks like GameStop has a physical version for $39.99.
All right, that's great. Yeah, $5 up for that. I'd say go for that. But yeah, this game is really fun. And again, I am really interested in checking out the online, not the online, the local multiplayer aspect of it. So I say go for it.
Awesome. Speaking of games on the go, the next game to talk about is Darksiders 2 Definitive Edition, developed by Gunfire Games, published by THQ Nordic. It released September 26th on the Switch for $29.99. Awakened by the end of Day's death, the most feared of the legendary Four Horsemen embarks upon a quest to restore mankind and redeem his brother's name. Along the way, the Horseman discovers that there are far more worse things than the earthly apocalypse, and that an ancient grudge may threaten all of creation. Pernell, tell us about Darksiders 2.
Darksiders 2 is what I consider to be a very ambitious sequel to the previous game, Darksiders 1. Spoiler alert, I hadn't played Darksiders 2, even though it's upstairs in my game library. Big shock. So getting access to a review code of it that was also on a portable console was just what the doctor ordered for me. So... and I have to say, I was pleasantly pleased by Darksiders 2. So, whereas a lot of people would describe Darksiders 1 as being a more straightforward adventure action game that takes notes from Zelda, I would say Darksiders 2 is a more expanded version of that with a larger, more expanded world. Think like the difference between Ocarina of Time, or sorry, Link to the Past and Ocarina of Time or something like that. So much more expansive, much more open environment to explore and trek around in. And in addition to that, they also added more RPG elements to this game. So death is capable of leveling up as you kill enemies and the like. There are treasure chests you can find that will give you various loots and treasure items, including new equipment and gear, which you can equip to get, you know, influence various stat boosts. You can get different weapons, being a primary weapon type being scythes, so different scythes. And then your secondary weapon would be anything ranging from axes to hammers, typically axes and hammers. And another, they're basically slower weapons, but they're more powerful. So you can find different item drops from chests or from enemies, and you can equip the ones that you want based on stats and all. And of course, there's also armor in this game too, which is actually kind of cool because you get different armor parts, and when you equip them on your guy, you actually can see them on the actual character model. So that's very visually appealing too. And honestly, I kind of felt a bit of joy in trying to customize my character to work the best I need him to work in various situations as far as like power goes. I never really found myself really beating my head against the wall to get the best stats on my gear. It was just, hey, here's an improved set of items. I'm going to equip them and be content with them. Exploration of the map, though, is addition is like it's kind of nice because the world is much more expansive and is wide. So in order to compensate for the fact that you'll be running across very wide landscapes, Death is capable of summoning his horse when he's in one of those environments, and then he can kind of just like get a bit of expedited movement as he's trekking around the map, though admittedly I do wish the horse was faster because these are really expansive environments when you're not in a dungeon or pretty much in a more enclosed space, eventful space. So as you are playing the game, you will, I guess essentially, like I said, you'll battle different enemies, and when you defeat them and level up, you'll get skill points from them, and also you'll occasionally get skill points from treasure chests and from some of the quests that exist within the game, because there are quests in this game now compared to the previous Darksiders. And those skill points can be used to boost Death's actual skill tree and give him new abilities. There are two different skill trees, admittedly, surprisingly, that have various branch-offs to them. One is more based around like just physical combat, and the other is based more around like magic and necromancy. It's like summon like undead monsters and stuff like that to help fight with you, which is actually kind of cool. graphically, this game, it's not in a really right home about, but it looks nice. Like, I didn't feel offended. It didn't hurt my eyes. It didn't come across as offensive or anything. It got the job done as I wanted it to. And honestly, performance-wise, the only issue I came across, though, it's not really a negative so much as just a way that it was functioning, is that I guess due to the fact that, again, it's a very large and connected world, when you go between, like, you know, different areas, sometimes you might have a load period where it'll just load up the next area and it'll stop progressing so it can do that. It's not enough to make you roll your eyes and get frustrated or upset, but it is something that you will notice as you're playing around with the game. Also, of course, if you die and need to get respawned, that load time is not short. It's not long either, but it's not instantaneous. So I think I've mentioned something like this in previous games in the past, but death is the punishment, pretty much, because, yeah, it does kick you right back to right before the fight started, but you got to wait for that load to happen, and you're going to be like, man, I ain't dying no more, because I ain't feeling like dealing with this junk. So one thing I found interesting about this game, too, also, which is something I did not expect, being that it is a sequel to a game that I know a lot of people who are really into, like, snappy action games was into, is that while this game does kind of send you on various quests, like, you know, storyline quests, like, say, go here, fetch this, now go here, fetch that, whatever, whatever, you can still kind of go off and do your own thing if you see something that you can reach on the way, because why not? If you have the ability to do it, you should be able to, and you can. Though, the funny part, and some people might not like this, though I personally thought it was kind of cool, is that it comes with some drawbacks sometimes. So, an example was I was on my way to one quest and I just happened to see a ruin off to the side. The cursor told me I still had a long ways to go to get to where I was supposed to go, but I said, screw that. I want to see if there's any cool treasure in this tomb. And it turned out to be a sort of mini dungeon. And at the end of it, I fought a boss who one-shot killed me.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
I was very surprised. Like, maybe I'm doing something wrong. I'm hitting him with my weapon, and I'm not even damaging him. Like, the health bar is not going down. Oh, one-hit kill? Apparently, I'm too weak for this guy. So it was kind of hilarious how I was able to take out everybody within the dungeon proper, but then the actual monster walloped me. I would wager that maybe he had like a weak point or something that I wasn't hitting because I wasn't surviving long enough to reach it. But nonetheless, it did tell me after multiple tries that I need to just accept that I cannot beat this guy and I can try to come back later and deal with him then. But I'd still like the fact that I was able to even get to that point of my own volition simply because the game offered me the ability to do that. I like when games give you the freedom to fail, as weird as that may sound. Yeah. So I honestly think this game is a lot of fun. Like, I like Darksiders in general, like, at least from the first game's perspective. And though this one is a lot less pointed and more open, I take that to be a good thing. I like the fact that they decided they wanted to get a little bit more ambitious with this title, and it shows. Quite frankly, the fact that it's on a portable console just makes it a gajillion times better for someone like me. Because as you know from just working with me with these over the years, if you hand me something that's on a handheld, oh, I'm signing me up. I'm playing that junk often, regularly. Oh, yeah. That's my sweet spot. I'll play it in the park, on the street, in the sheets. Doesn't matter. I'm playing.
Whoa there.
Yeah, buddy. I'm freaking around.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I did find this game a lot of fun. And also, again, like, the combat is just it's very snappy, very punchy. It's not too technical, mind you. I mean, you get different abilities you can apply. Oh, I will say this is one thing I found to be a bit of a complaint worth mentioning for folks who might care about it. So the way combat works is, again, there's like a melee, there's like their light attack and your heavy attack. And there's also a lock-on feature where you hold down the left trigger or left trigger. I guess that makes sense. And you'll lock onto the guy and see their, you know, their health bar and their name. In addition to that, though, there's also a, like, your special attack wheel where you can determine what specials you want to equip to your selection gauge. And the way you trigger that is by holding the left bumper and then pressing the button attributed to it. So what would happen to me a lot was I'd have to outright start using two fingers in the upper left corner because I needed one finger to hold down the lock on and another finger to hold down to do my special attacks. when what I really wanted was for the lock on to just be press it and it stays until I turn it off. Yeah. But there was no option in the menu to actually do that. I don't know why. Made me kind of sad. But and also there's no way to make the attack on the R button. So it has to be the L button. So it'll be like L plus B or L plus Y, something like that. So unfortunately, that's something that you'll just have to get used to dealing with. But again, it wasn't a game ruiner. Just something worth noting in case you are very particular about how combat works and you need to hear that beforehand. But I still found the game to be quite fun. For sure, for sure. But it was a gem, nonetheless.
All right, well, $30 on Darksiders 2 on the Switch, what do you say?
I'd say if you haven't experienced it yet, this is the way to go about doing it, unless you're some kind of graphics hound, in which case, stop being that and play it.
All right, well, next
time. I'm tired of y'all.
Yeah. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Rhymelands Hammer of Thor, developed by Kai Games, published by Cubic Games, released October 4th on the Switch for $9.99. You're Rosic Christo, a young treasure hunter on a quest to unveil a mystery behind a new enemy that arrives up into your world. On your way, you uncover a truth about your heritage and stop the threat that could destroy the world. Chris, tell us about Rhymelands Hammer of Thor.
Yeah, I love they treat it like a dark secret, like what your family lineage is. Obviously, it's like you're going to be related to Thor or something. Anyway, yeah, Rhymelands. So this is a kind of a isometric view dungeon crawler. So something that would make you think of maybe like a Diablo or even Pillars of Eternity, which I talked about recently. However, unlike those games, this one is 9 years old and was developed for the iPad initially. Really? Yeah, this is a mobile game through and through. I was surprised to find that too, because I actually felt like the game was pretty good quality. It's just when I saw the graphics, I was like, this looks like it's maybe a little older. And when I looked it up, sure enough, 2010 was its initial release date. Wow. But it won. It got tons of great reviews back then, and it deserves them because, this is a game that basically it features all the same like dungeon crawling, tropes that you would expect. You know, you have your hub town that has your blacksmith right there, you know, or your weapon item seller guy, whatever, right there. And of course your mentor who sends you off onto, you know, into your different locations where you can, pick up MacGuffins and do quests, you know, the usual type of thing. And then, you know, you get into the dungeons and do all that. But the what makes this game kind of stand out is the fact that it's when you get into conflicts, that is to say you run into enemies, everything occurs on a grid. So you're actually running on a grid. You don't have like full motion control over your character. You're just kind of running alongside a sort of linear path almost. And then when enemies come up, it actually becomes a little bit more of a tactic style game in that you move from block to block and take turns. So it's your turn, the enemy's turn, etc. Now, the way that combat is dealt with is, you know, there's three types of weaponry that you can use. Pistols, which, you know, you can shoot them from a distance as they come closer to you, and then your melee weapons, which might be a sword or a hammer or a truncheon of some kind, and then, you know, you have your magic attacks, which are, you know, it's magic, you know, it's going to have different things do different things. But whenever you go to actually do those things, what happens is that it actually drops dice from the sky next to you, because you actually do roll dice to do damage and defend in this game.
Interesting.
So, I love when games do that.
Yeah, exactly. So you start off with a set amount of dice, but like it'll actually be when you're going to equip a new weapon, it'll actually tell you plus one to combat dice. And so it'll drop another dice on there, which gives you another chance to get a successful hit. So the dices themselves only have, like, I think it's like four-sided dice, essentially. Like, it looks like, you know, your typical gambling dice, but what pops up is either going to be one skull, two skulls, an X, or a shield. So if you get a shield or an X when you're defending, The X doesn't count as anything. It's just, it, you know, that's nothing. But the shield is actually a successful defense. So if you get more shields, then you're fine. And when you're attacking, obviously the one and the two skulls determine how high your damage is going to be based on the range of your weapon. So your weapon might be a, you know, a sword that does 35 to 45. Well, if you get like all two skulls, then you're going to do all 45 of that damage plus probably a bonus. And, so, you know, and you kind of take turns. And so if you, you know, pull more shields out than the enemy pulls out or rolls skulls, then you successfully block their attacks. And you better do that because enemies hit freaking hard in this game when they actually connect. I mean, your character does too, but it really actually gives you the sense of like danger of like, oh, if I get a bad roll, I am dead because these enemies are hitting me pretty darn hard. It doesn't really start that way for the first, like, maybe dungeon or so, but, man, it ramps it up quick once you start getting out there. But fortunately, the game features a really cool leveling up system that is, so it's your usual skill tree path, right? So you're like, oh, I'm going to put a point into my melee attacks, and, you know, or I might put a point into my gun attacks or into my magic attacks. Now, the problem here is not problem, but the way they do this is that the pattern of like trying to unlock new abilities and get more strength into one type of aspect, you really have to level up way more than you should in order to like get both good at melee and good at shooting. So for that reason, you actually do kind of have to decide early on whether your character is going to be specialized in melee, shooting, or in magic. Because if you try to spread it out too much, you're going to end up getting like one-shotted in, you know, in an early dungeon. So,
wow.
Yeah, it has a simplicity in its presentation that belies the mechanics underneath. It actually seems to be more of like, you know, the kind of engine building game that I really dig, because I always like getting, you know, min-maxing and things like that, you know, getting those stats up. And there's another aspect to it. You both have lots of like cool items that you run into regularly in this game. Like anytime you run into a chest, it could be a sword that's like literally twice as good as the one you picked up, like, you know, a few minutes ago. and it like actually ends up being a game changer. And you have an onboard crafting system where if you pick up materials or break your old weapons apart into materials, you can actually create really good weapons that way too. So you'll end up like actually doing a lot of experimenting on different items. And if they don't work out, then you spend a little bit of money to break them apart and try something else. So like there's a whole lot of ways that you can like really customize your character here. And I really appreciate that. But yeah, on its face, it's basically a, you know, it's a one-on-one, you know, one lady versus the entire world, which her name is Rose by default. You can actually make her name whatever you want. I guess the last name sticks, but they never use it. The story seems pretty cool. I didn't delve too much into the story because honestly, the, you know, second and third dungeons kind of kicked my ass and I kind of forgot about the story. So it's just like, you know, you go from floor one to floor two and suddenly enemies are doing twice as much damage as they did on floor one. You're like, get me out of here. And, but that's actually what I crave in these kind of games. And apparently I didn't see any difficulty setting, and if there was one, I always set that to the lowest first, and then I like try it another new game with it higher just to see what the range is. I guess I didn't see that in this because it, you know, I don't remember seeing one. But yeah, like overall I'm very impressed at how good this game looks for the fact that it's a 9-year-old mobile game. It has that kind of, I want to say PlayStation 2 era, maybe, where like you can see you could count the polygons on mountains and stuff if you wanted to, but they have good textures on them and stuff, so it's not so bad. Your character looks fine, and everything kind of happens, like I said, in an isometric angle that's, you know, fixed camera, so they're able to make it look really good for what clearly is going on under the hood, especially considering it's like only a 200 megabyte game.
Damn.
Like an entire RPG in 200 megabytes. I was like, wow, that's actually Speaking of which, Sniper Elite 3 is 6.3 gigabytes, which is not actually that bad. That's about average.
Yeah.
But, Yeah. I was thinking of something else, but yeah, so Rime Worlds, I was actually pretty impressed with it and was especially kind of taken aback by how much challenge they pile on to go with the very good, crafting and leveling up mechanics.
Nice. Well, $10 on Rhymelands, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I think $10 is definitely worth it. I was honestly surprised it was only $10, like, when I looked at it, because I didn't look at the price before, and, when I looked at it later, I was like, oh, I thought I was playing a $20 game, so...
Yeah, Cubic Games seems to release things pretty affordably, so they're a pretty good publisher.
I think it's, largely the benefit of it being a port of an already successful game, so... And the Switch is a great home for it. By the way, because it's a mobile game, it actually has full touchscreen controls as well as gamepad controls, and both of them feel good, which is rare.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good that that touch controls work as well.
Yeah, they got nice big bubbly like icons next to the words, and you can either press the button on the controller to access that, your potions are assigned to the shoulder buttons and things like that. They do a good job of assigning different moves to different buttons, or you can just tap the icon with your finger and then be good.
That works.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Dicey Dungeons, developed and published by Terry Cavanaugh, released August 13th on Steam for $14.99. Become a giant walking die and battle to the end of a battle to the end of an ever-changing dungeon. I blame Cole for this.
Sorry.
Can you escape the cruel whims of Lady Luck? Purnell, tell us about Dicey Dungeons.
Dicey Dungeons can best be described as Terry Cavanaugh's greatest game he's ever designed, at least as far as I can tell, because Dicey Dungeons is a spectacular take on, I guess some way still considered to be sort of like a roguelike-ish dungeon-y game, dungeon crawler. But the idea is that numerous characters, total being like five with one bonus character, have traversed their way to this dungeon run by Lady Luck, who promises each of these individuals their greatest heart desire if they can make their way to the bottom of her dungeon. Sounds easy enough? Actually, no, it doesn't sound easy at all. But anyway, each of these characters gets turned into a die. And then they are given a class based, I guess, on who they were when they showed up. So you have traditional classes like the warrior and the mage, but then you have not so traditional classes like the inventor, which I thought was pretty interesting, and the robot. So what ends up happening is you start out as the warrior and you go into the dungeon, and each dungeon is composed of about, well, I don't want to say each because they change depending on your scenario, but I'll get to that in a minute. But essentially a dungeon consists of multiple floors, and each floor's layout is built off of a series of nodes connected by pathways. And you just kind of say, scroll your mouse over to the specific node you want to go to, click on it, and your dice character will walk over to it. Each node can have a number of things on it. It can be a shop where you can buy new items. It can be a trading post where you can trade an item for another item. Treasure chest, which has items. And then, of course, the eponymous enemies that would exist in a dungeon. Now, what makes, this game special and unique is the fact that this is a dicey dungeon, not just any old dungeon. So combat is all in the dice, baby. So when you get into a combat scenario, your character will have a series of equipment items on him. And every item in this game, every single one, its effect is based on dice. So let's say, for example, you have a sword. That was I think that was the starting weapon that the warrior had. And what that says is 1x blank damage. What that says is when you start your round out, your character will roll his dice that are allocated to him. And then when you get the die outputs, you can determine what weapons you want to slot them to. So in the case of the sword with the 1x blank damage, you put a 6 die in there and it does 6 damage to the enemy. Now, that's one of the more simple items. There's other really cool things, and they get more and more complicated based on the character you pick. But, for example, the I guess it may not be exclusive to the inventor or not. I don't know, but there's like he has an equipable item where you put two die in and it combines the face value of the two dice. Or sometimes you can put one die into an item and it splits it into two dice of lesser values. So you can kind of like play around with it. But then once you've slotted your item in, you use the weapon, it does damage to the enemy. And then when you've used up all your dice, you can end your turn. And then on the enemy's turn, he also does attacks in a similar fashion. He will roll the dice that are allocated to him. All of his attacks are built around dice rolls, and they get to be pretty freaking wacky. Like, I think one of my favorite enemies in the game, as far as it goes, was there was like a porcupine, and all of his spots, all of his different, he has like five attacks, and every one of them needs to have one roll to use it. However, what he does is he has one other attack that will split his die into ones. So if he rolls a six, he gets six ones. And then he does hit you with six different attacks. It's ridiculous. but if he rolls a two, he does two attacks. And it's just like that. There's another character I came across where she has six total attacks, and each one is specifically built around the die face. So you roll a two, she can only do the attack that has a two on it. Three attack only can be done if she rolls a three, and so on and so forth. So that's kind of cool too. Now, each character, what makes them unique, however, is their playstyle is fairly different. So the warrior is the lowest difficulty character to play as, and his attack style is generally just get a shield, slot some die into the shield, block. Got a sword, slot some die into the sword, boom. And all of his different weapons are things like that, like, you know, multiply the die face by this, but you can only put a maximum die face of four into it. So two times that die face is the attack damage you do. But then you get the other crazy character. So again, the robot's freaking awesome. So the robot has his set of attacks, right? But the way he plays, he's almost like press your luck. So you roll a die. Well, before I even say roll a die, he has a CPU. The CPU has a number, let's say 10. That means that if his entirety of die rolls go over 10, all of his attacks become broken and he can't use them. So what happens is you roll your die. Let's say you rolled like a six. Okay, I can slot that die and then roll another one, or I can just not slot it at all because I want to use two die on one thing and then roll again. But ultimately, I'm going to probably use the machine to, you know, to roll another die because I want to get closer to that 10. Because if you hit 10, you get the lucky jackpot, which gives you a bonus as a result on your outcome, whether it's like an additional 5 damage or heals the robot or gives you an extra die to slot to something. And then you ultimately, once you start going to stores and finding treasure chests, you end up getting things that you can equip that will allow you to increase the range of the jackpot. Or let's say instead of having to roll a 10, you can roll like a 9 or 10. Boom, you get the jackpot. You might get an item where if you slot a die into it, it will increase your total jackpot amount. So it can go from 10 to 11. Or you might get a thing that lets you bring your total roll count from 6 to like 5 or 5 to 4. And it lets you manipulate that wheel. It's freaking awesome to play around with. And I could go on and on about the different play styles, but trust me when I say every character's play style is very different. When you fight enemies and defeat them, you will get experience points. And when you get enough experience, you will level up, which will fully heal your character. And it'll also reward you with one more die to roll. So level 2, you can roll 2 die. Level 3, you roll 3 die, whatever, and so forth. And I think you max out at level 5 or 6 typically on a run. Now, the very bottom of a dungeon floor, there will be a boss down there. And you hope that you have enough cool equipment and a decent play style at this point to allow you to deal with the boss and come out undefeated. But if you do lose, you got to run the entire dungeon run again, which doesn't take a ton of time. So it's not like, oh no, I screwed up. No, I wasted all this time. No, it's still friggin' fun. Now, after you finish your first dungeon run as the warrior, you unlock the next character. And it's the thief. And then you unlock the next character, which is the robot. And then I'm going to name the other ones, but I probably kind of did. Who cares? Point is, you unlock a bunch of characters. And after you've unlocked and played as every character one time, you unlock the scenario mode. And scenario mode is awesome because it allows you to go back and use the different characters that you've played as. And rather than just do a typical dungeon run with them, it gives you a challenge for that character and run a dungeon that way. So, for example, there might be a character whose challenge is You start out at a health level, but every time you level up, your max HP goes down, not up. So it makes you want to avoid combat as much as possible to get to the bottom, or maybe even just balance it so that you get enough, like, die, but not too many die that you have no health. You know, and it's just, the game is amazing. It's stupid fun to play. I was honestly kind of addicted to it, and it helps that the soundtrack is composed by none other than Chipsel. And just like I said, this is probably Terry Cavanaugh's best game. I personally feel this is Chipsel's best output yet. I've been listening to this crap at work regularly since I started playing this game. I listened to it at work all day, yesterday, today, and the day before. I love the OST to this game. It's stupid good, and Chipsel's amazing, and the game is amazing too. This is my pick of the week, easily. I love it. No, and it's hilarious too.
Do I even need to ask for $15 your decision?
This is a terrible game. I recommend it to no one. No one. No, this is total buy it town. It's, do not sleep on this. This is worth every penny. And this is a fine example of one of those games where no one saw it coming. And I'm sure Terry Cavanaugh was probably sitting at like a ramen joint eating like a spicy bowl, had a freaking heat attack, and just like, wait a minute, Eureka, die people that don't die in die dungeons. Crazy, right? But this game is phenomenal and is definitely on the buy train. Worth every penny.
Awesome. Fingers crossed it comes to console. Then again, I'm still waiting for VVVVVV to come to Xbox, which it still hasn't done. So,
hopefully it does, honestly. Though I will say that the game controls with the mouse. Like, I tried to connect the controller to the PC to play it, and it's still defaulted to mouse because it's pretty much just like scroll over, click. Though there's nothing stopping it from just using the thumbstick to scroll over to something and then, you know, clicking with the A button. So.
Oh, well, one final game to talk about tonight is called The Winter's Daydream, developed by Ebihime. I don't know how to...
Ebihime? Yeah, that would be correct. Ebihime.
Published by
Hime means princess in Japan, so that would mean Princess Ebi.
Sama?
Huh? Is it? Oh.
I was just teased, like, Princess Hime-sama! I'm a weeb.
Oh, Jesus. Anyway, published by Sometimes You... releasing October 8th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Vita for $5.99. A boy returns to his countryside home after spending half a year in the city, only to discover the unimaginable. His elderly grandmother has transformed into a cute young girl. Hijinks ensue. Chris.
Wait, what?
That premise is from what?
I know.
Chris, tell us about A Winter's Daydream.
Okay, so A Winter's Daydream is actually like one of my first forays into like a visual novel that's actually literally just a visual novel.
We got to get this out of the way right at the top. Xbox and PlayStation gamers, this is the easiest achievement or trophy completion you will ever find in your life.
Absolutely, because this is a visual novel that contains no choices, no branching paths, no choice, like nothing that you can do in the game besides just read it.
Yes, it is just a visual book. Novel.
Yeah, it is a visual novel that you can have autoplay for the entirety of it, and you can change the speed of the text. So if you want to ratchet that all the way up on PS4 or Xbox, and then just let the whole thing play. You'll end up getting all the achievements in the game just passively.
Yep. You don't have to do a damn thing.
And I didn't play this on anything with achievements, Joe. How many achievements were there?
I think there were 10 or 11, something like that.
10 or 11. Dang. Okay, so that's out of the way now. So yes, when I heard about this visual novel about somebody... whose grandmother has turned into a cute young girl, I was like, okay, well, I gotta read this then. And sure enough, yeah, I actually did read the whole thing. I quote-unquote beat the game, which involved just being, you know, sitting there and drinking coffee and not falling asleep. That sounds
challenging.
Yeah, exactly. That was the hardest thing I've had
to say is that this is the Dark Souls of visual novels.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
Dark Souls of visual novels. I want to read that now. Okay. So, yeah. So, like, the thing about it, though, is that once you actually do read it, it will unlock all of the extras, which gives you an image gallery and all of the soundtrack, which is literally just 8 songs, and a note from the author, Ebihime, who explains to you that she was inspired by apparently all of these, like, actual, like, you know, sexual novels where a grandmother will, like, turn into, like, a young girl and, like, you know, those kind of hijinks ensue. And she was like, I want to actually write the wholesome version of this. And that's actually what this game is. So kind of a spoiler, I suppose. The hijinks that are mentioned are not the kind you probably immediately thought of.
But, no, this is not one of those kind of games. But Carnage, yeah, dropping 25 biddies.
She's all about that Dark Souls visual novel play.
Exactly. Them wet pancakes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was just what they wrote. Anyways, okay. So, yeah, the actual, like, I don't want to give too much of the book's plot away, honestly, because that's all there is. It's about a guy who basically travels to see his family. You know, he hangs out with his mom and dad, and, you know, they're nice, but his sister is, like, just really, really terrible, and, you know, he's struggling with that. Also struggling with not, like, with mentioning how beautiful she is in, like, a weird way that I thought was going to take a turn, but it didn't. I'm like, this boy is written to be, like, kind of, like, in need of some kind of therapy, I think.
My flowers, yeah, she's blossomed anew.
Yeah, no, really. That's actually how it kind of is. Like, in that.
And, leave it to the weeb to come up with that one.
Yeah. Hey!
No, the author of this is seemingly an unapologetic weeb. I actually checked out her Twitter, and she's written many of these books. and so, yeah, like, there's no mistake about it. There's weebness involved here. In fact, the game has a healthy dose of very specific, like, Japanese, like, nouns. That is to say, places that they talk about, food that they talk about. Like, you know, when he says something smells worse than my grandmother's natto, like, you know, pot with the lid open. Like, you'd have to have been to Japan and know what natto is to, you know, to understand that that's a really dank, terrible thing. And I've only had it described to me. Apparently, it's a nightmare.
No, you didn't get to experience it while you were over there?
No. I wanted to experience nice things. Anyways, it is not a nice thing. And yeah, like, they talk about celebrities and, like, famous authors, like, in Japan and things like that. So it's very... if you're not aware of, like, very specific Japanese, like, culture, then, you know, old and new, because it's the kid's talking to his grandmother too, and she knows all this stuff from the past. Like, this game will give you a lot to Google, let's just say. But yeah, so he, you know, visits his family, and then he suddenly decides, more or less just to get away from his sister, who's, like, you know, tormenting him with all kinds of psychological, whatever, being a brat, I guess. He decides to go visit his grandmother, who is, like, about 40 minutes away. And when he does, they have, like, a nice chat or whatever. But then the next day, of course, she ends up being a 16-year-old girl version of herself, but with all of her same memories. Like, she knows who she is, and she actually is just like, oh, this is surprising, but I got over it. And, you know, so she's, like, basically the guy's just kind of there to serve as, like, our, you know, our stand-in. You know, he's not really given too much of his own personality, even though this whole thing is about him. He's just there to be incredulous at the fact that, you know, his grandmother's now 16. But, you know, it's one of those things where there's kind of a point to it, and it actually weaves into this story. And what ends up happening, I'm not going to say anything else about the plot from there. I'm just going to say that, you know, whereas, like, this seemed like it was going to be, like, a really over-the-top kind of comedy, maybe a, you know, like, a cute wink and a nod to, like, the more pervy parts of like visual novel communities, things like that. It actually just ends up being like this really heartwarming story that really makes you think about like the amount of time that you have with people that you're close to, and like, you know, whether you can fix your problems with people who you don't always get along with, and like all this other stuff. Like, it's actually a pretty good emotional story, and I actually found it a very enjoyable read. It's not really overtly funny at any point. Like, apart from the, if you derive humor, like a lot of weebs do, of somebody just being incredulous at a situation, then yes, this novel is a barrel of laughs. But you know, if you're looking for something like just way wacky and ridiculous or something like that, it's a little bit more subtle. And like I said, it's like basically 0% perv. It's, everything that happens is just like, just the protagonist giving silent, like, you know, what would happen if kind of situations, just mulling over this stuff, you know, himself, and none of it ever actually like plays out in the actual story. So, you know, for that reason, this game could work with, you know, with younger audiences, older audiences, you know, people who aren't necessarily tuned into like this whole genre. But like I said, at the same time, it does contain some very esoteric, like specifically Japanese things. And so for that reason, I'm not exactly sure who the audience is for this, but I will say I enjoyed it a lot. So I guess it's me.
Well, then $6 on it. What do you say?
$6. I'd say that, yeah, it was a, I'd say unless you are looking for something like more, over the top, smutty, or a game at all, then, you know, you might end up looking elsewhere. But if you are looking for a pretty good story that takes about 3 to 4 hours to play out, I think at the reading speed I had it on, I put it down to 50% because I don't read very quickly. It ended up being like about a 5 hour thing for me. You know, if you're looking to while away an afternoon with a cute story, then I think this one's worth picking up. But otherwise, there is no gameplay whatsoever in this game, so don't buy it thinking you're going to play it.
Yeah. Unless you just want easy achievements, then buy it.
Exactly. If you just want to buy achievements, then sure. The one and only complaint that I do have about the actual mechanics of a visual novel, yes, believe it or not, I had one, is the fact that you cannot rewind or turn back the page at all. If you miss something, you have to either restart the whole chapter, which involves actually like backing out of the game completely and then loading it, which starts the chapter over, or you just missed it.
Yeah. So
I would really appreciate the next time one of these visual novels comes around from Sometimes You, just please, you know, there's none of the buttons on the controller do anything besides A and B, so maybe throw in a little rewind button in there somewhere.
That's, I don't, a good
even
idea.
Mind. Yeah, I don't even mind if it makes the music go backwards. By the way, the music is really, really good in this game. There's only 8 tracks, and they will play for several loops each before you move on to the next song. But fortunately, they are very agreeable tunes, so I liked that about it, too.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Right on.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. It's been a successful one, I think.
I hope so.
I think it went well.
I hope so.
Cole, you're still here. That's nice.
I didn't die in the process.
Sounds like we're all crashing from our sugar high earlier.
We you are. Know. The pixie sticks are wearing off.
No.
You know, there's a cure for that. They could give more us $1 sticks on Patreon, and then we could buy more pixie sticks.
Oh, yeah. Hey. Whoa. Cole, that's there.
Slow down there, Pixiette.
So, yeah, patreon.com/the SML podcast. Give us your money.
And we will buy pixie sticks.